Welcome to the Israel Daily News Podcast. I'm your host, Shanna Fold, and I'm here to get you caught up quickly. I've got some top news stories for you today from Israel, and guess what? You're listening, so you're already on top of your game. Survive and thrive, people. Knowledge is the best weapon. Today is Monday, January 22nd, 2024 in the Gregorian calendar and the 12th of Shvat 5784 in the Hebrew calendar. At the end of the show, we'll share a feature report with evacuees and survivors from the October 7th massacre, whom are now living in twin apartment buildings in South Tel Aviv. Their stories are shocking. Now, let's get to the news. U.S. media outlets are announcing that Israel has offered the Hamas terror organization a proposal in which there would be a two-month pause in fighting in exchange for the remaining 130 hostages. Israeli outlets have not reported this, however. I might be the only journalist awake in the country right now because I'm not seeing this currently in Hebrew media. I hosted an event for the internationals living in Tel Aviv tonight with my organization called Tribe Tel Aviv. We brought in a city council candidate to share her vision for the city. Her name is Zippy Brand, and she's running with a mayoral candidate known as Orna. So that explains what I am doing up so late, and I've been communicating with the Americans, and I've been consuming the American news. So there must be something brewing here in Israel while people are fast asleep. I'll be back to report on the factual accuracy of this news release. The details are that during a two-month pause in fighting, hostages would be released along with dead bodies of hostages as well. First, women would be released, then men 60 years and older, and those in critical medical condition. After that, the release of female soldiers and men under the age of 60. And then after that, Israeli male soldiers and then the bodies, for which there are expected to be 20 to 30 bodies being held in captivity. Each hostage would be swapped for Palestinian prisoners who are in Israeli prisons largely for carrying out terror attacks or planning on it against Israelis. Israel's proposal does not agree to ending the war or to releasing all of the 6,000 Palestinian prisoners who are in Israeli prisons or detention centers. In the last go-around, Palestinians had a 3-to-1 ratio, meaning that for each Israeli hostage, 3 Palestinian prisoners were released from Israeli jails. Again, Hebrew media has not confirmed the report about this new potential hostage deal. However, once you hear the rest of today's podcast, it might start to make sense to you why such a deal is being put out into the air. On Monday, the IDF announced 3 soldiers were killed in an ambush in Khan Yunis, Gaza. The fallen paratroopers were 27-year-old IDF Major David Nati Alfasi from Be'er Sheva in the south of Israel, 24-year-old IDF Major Eli Levy from Tel Aviv, and 22-year-old IDF Captain Eyal Mevarech Twido from Beit Gamliel. All 3 served in Battalion 202 of the paratroopers. The total number of fallen soldiers has now reached 535, including those killed on October 7th, the day that Hamas terrorists entered Israeli sovereign land, raped, pillaged, kidnapped, and murdered and mutilated 1,200 people in the south of Israel, starting a war between Hamas and Israel. At this point, there is a major escalation in the western part of Khan Yunis involving 7 brigades, artillery, tanks, and air support. We here at the Israel Daily News Podcast send our wishes to the families, friends, neighbors, and community that they find some way to rest after hearing this tragic news. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu told the families of hostages held in Gaza that Hamas has not presented a concrete proposal for a release agreement. He said, quote, contrary to what some are suggesting, there is no tangible Hamas proposal. That's not accurate, end quote. Netanyahu also mentioned that Israel has put forward its own initiative without getting into specific details. And that's why I said that you might want to keep listening to the rest of the show for that first news story to make sense. Sunday night, Netanyahu said, quote, Israel utterly rejects Hamas's demand for the IDF to end its military campaign in Gaza in exchange for the release of the remaining hostages. Netanyahu emphasized that Israel is committed to returning all hostages and sees military pressure as a necessary condition to achieve the goal. He said he firmly rejected Hamas's terms, which include an end to the war, complete IDF withdrawal from Gaza, retention of Hamas control, and the release of those involved in the October 7th attack. Netanyahu emphasized that agreeing to these terms would jeopardize Israel's security and the safety of its own citizens. He also said that he opposes the establishment of a Palestinian state and emphasized the need for a full Israeli security control over Gaza at the moment. Netanyahu says he will not compromise on these principles and challenged other politicians to show their leadership by stating their positions clearly to the citizens of Israel. The prime minister also acknowledged ongoing international and domestic pressure, but affirmed his determination to continue the war on all fronts. Now, just a day after, so that was Monday, today, relatives of Israelis held captive by Hamas terrorists bursted into a Knesset Finance Committee session in Jerusalem, urging lawmakers to do more for the release of their loved ones. It was quite the display, and it was all caught on camera. The relatives came in shouting, crying, and with their photos of loved ones holding them above their heads. During the meeting, the Bank of Israel Governor Amir Yaron was expected to present the 2024 budget. The protesters called for urgent action, expressing desperation and chanting the release of the hostages. The disruption led to a temporary break in the committee meeting. Committee Chairman Moshe Gafni assured the families that efforts would be made to secure the hostages' return. Earlier in the day, the families met with Prime Minister Netanyahu at his office in Jerusalem. So that was before the families barged into the Knesset Finance Committee session, making demands that they get their loved ones back. Now, this next news story was written before there was a news story out that Israel made a proposal to Hamas to have a 2-month pause in fighting for the release of hostages. So I just want to highlight how quickly things are changing in the news cycle and how quickly discussions are shifting behind closed doors when it comes to politics. Defense Minister Yoav Gallant told representatives of Israeli hostage families that the IDF is making significant progress in Khan Yunis, closing in on Hamas's top leadership and the hostages, meaning that they're closing in on finding where the hostages are. Operations in Khan Yunis have reached a high point, and early signs indicate that sensitive locations for Hamas are being approached, bringing them closer to the goal of dismantling Hamas and securing the release of around 130 Israeli hostages. The IDF recently revealed they found cages in Khan Yunis where hostages were previously being held by Hamas. During his visit to the Israeli Air Force at the Hatzor base, Gallant shared his appreciation for the coordination between the Air Force and ground forces in achieving operational objectives. Prime Minister Netanyahu on Monday updated France's defense minister during their meeting in Jerusalem and discussed Israel's wait for evidence confirming the delivery of medicines that were procured by France to hostages in Gaza. Last week, some shipments of medicine for hostages were sent into Gaza through Egypt, and the deal included a little part that said Israel would have to confirm that the medicine got to where it was supposed to go. Now, as that mission is underway, Israel is waiting to find out if the Red Cross actually made it to the hostages to deliver that medicine. Hostages have been held now for more than 108 days, around 108/109 days. It's the middle of the night here. Many are elderly people or people who take daily doses of life-altering medication and have been without those medications this entire time since October 7th. We are now at the end of January. The Hamas terror organization has not permitted the International Red Cross to access the hostages, and that is absolutely against international law. Prime Minister Netanyahu and France's defense minister also talked about escalating tensions in Lebanon with a joint emphasis on the need for Hezbollah to withdraw from the border in alignment with the United Nations Security Council Resolution 1701. Netanyahu said that Israel aims to achieve the objective through diplomatic means or alternative approaches, alluding to potential military action if Hezbollah fighters do not retreat from the border, where they have been sending missiles into Israel, some of which have actually killed Israelis living in the north. I want to thank all of you for your interest in Israeli affairs, Israeli politics, our world politics. I also want to thank all of you who personally finance and fund the Israel Daily News podcast with monthly contributions. You can support us with monthly contributions by going over to anchor.fm/Israel Daily News. You can contribute whatever feels good for you. Listener support is literally what helps us continue down the road of independent journalism so that we can do the work the way the work should be done. And that's according to us, what we think is important, and for us not to be dictated by any higher ups. More than anything, we want to thank you for your words of affirmation. Those words get me specifically into my recording chair every single time. To make a one-time contribution to our special wartime coverage, which we take very seriously, you can just type in my name, Shanna Fold, and GoFundMe into Google. It'll be your top hit. So that's GoFundMe and Shanna Fold, and you can find it right away. Thank you to our latest subscriber and our latest contributor, Daphna Shochat, who sent us a contribution in an increment of Chai, which means life, and for Jews, the number 18 is equivalent to the meaning of the word life. So if you send money in increments of 18, it's supposed to be good luck, in case you didn't know that. So I always get a kick out of that. If you have heard your name or you are an anonymous donor, but you would appreciate getting a thank you note from me, send me an email with your mailing address at shannafold@gmail.com, and I'm going to respond with a handwritten thank you note to show you my appreciation. My name has two N's in it, and I'm very sensitive about that. That's S-H-A-N-N-A-F-U-L-D. You can follow me on Instagram, or you can follow us at IsraelDaily.news on Instagram to see all the video and picture and media that we would like to show you, but we can't show you because we're an audio podcast. So if you want to see our materials, you can head over to Instagram or Facebook at IsraelDaily.news. Or you can see personal clips and highlights from life in Tel Aviv through my lens on Instagram at Shanna Fold. Israel's Space Week is scheduled to take place from January 28th to February 2nd, with special events arranged for Israeli evacuees and IDF reservists. Despite the ongoing war with Hamas, professional conferences featuring key figures in Israel's space sector, including astronaut Eitan Stibi and representatives from Italy, France, and Azerbaijan, are going to be held. So these events are going to be held anyway. The event this year will be in a limited format. The Israel Space Agency intends to highlight the space sector's economic and social growth potential during this time period. The week honors Ilan Ramon, Israel's first astronaut, and it includes various activities like lectures and conferences, with some events requiring advanced registration. So you can head over to the space.gov.il website if you want to be a part of Israel Space Week. I have to say, I forgot about Israel Space Week since last year's Israel Space Week. I have to admit, I wasn't thinking about Israel Space Week. And now for our feature report. Just over a week ago, I went on a visit to two new buildings in South Tel Aviv to try to get some insights for the Jerusalem Post, a newspaper for which I have been contributing freelance articles and video reports since 2018. On a street in the up-and-coming neighborhood of Florentine, almost the entire kibbutz Re'im is living in two buildings. A kibbutz is an Israeli concept for communal living, where people work and play together in rural areas around the country. And actually, kibbutzim, that's the plural word for kibbutz in Hebrew, are actually the way that this country was started. And each one was producing different produce and products. Kibbutz Re'im was one of the many communities attacked and overtaken by Hamas terrorists. Homes there were burnt down and many people were violently killed. When I approached the two buildings that have been allocated to house this entire community, I saw tons of kids playing in a courtyard. It looked like there was a playground when I approached, but it was actually just a bunch of families with their little ones running around on cement or pedaling little tricycles. A whole lot different than what families from the green southern community of Re'im are used to. I opened the gate and entered the area. I had no idea what to expect, but I began to introduce myself to people that were sitting on benches, explaining myself in Hebrew, telling who I was, why I was there, that I'm a journalist, and I don't mean to intrude, but I would love to talk to them about their experience in transitioning from living in a hotel to being put up in apartments in Tel Aviv. Someone directed me to Shani Medina. He spoke English quite well. He and his wife and two small children survived the attack on October 7th. This little family and 400 other Kibbutz Re'im members officially moved into twin buildings on Herzl Street in South Tel Aviv in mid-December. The city of Tel Aviv pulled together an absorption program, and in addition to providing housing, it also worked to offer benefits to families who needed to be evacuated from the Gaza envelope after the massacre. The Israel Business Forum was also a substantial part of making this happen. This forum is made up of 200 of Israel's largest company leaders. We're talking executives of large banks, insurance companies, energy companies, and others. All of these executives got together to figure out what to do with Israel's issues right now. Together with the city, these movers and shakers were able to take over units in a new set of buildings. And those buildings are housing Kibbutz Re'im residents for 1 year. They took the whole kibbutz and put them into two buildings side by side. The idea is to keep the community together and to get people out of hotels where they were previously living in Eilat. Everyone I spoke with said the number one relief of moving into more permanent housing as opposed to hotel rooms was being able to cook for themselves for the first time in 3 months. That was resounding. Everybody that I talked with said the big thing for them was that they couldn't cook their own food. Families that have more than three children are given two apartments within the building, one for sleeping and one for cooking and living. Medina said that while his kibbutz friends and neighbors are happy to have housing, they're finding it difficult to live between two units. Shani Medina was in Kibbutz Re'im when he worked to protect his family for 30 hours straight while hiding in a bomb shelter. He was the one to bravely, on that day, leave the safe room, and I'm calling it a bomb shelter. I'm talking about the small bomb shelter inside of the house, which is called a safe room in English. And he actually left the little room to bring food back for the kids, which was considered a brave thing to do on October 7th because terrorists were coming into people's private homes. In the south of Israel, most homes have one reinforced room to protect them from Hamas rocket fire, which Hamas has been sending rockets to rain down on Israel since 2007. So because of that, every house in the south of Israel has a safe room, which is a room that has a lot of extra cement around it so that if a rocket would hit, the people inside the room could be safe. Now, at one point, Medina actually left his little room only because he wanted to assist soldiers who came to the kibbutz to help. He showed them where to go and pointed out that houses had people that had not responded since the early morning because a lot of these kibbutzim had WhatsApp group chats. And so he took the army officials to the houses where there were people inside that had not responded into the group chat in several hours. Medina was supposed to be on the kibbutz's first responder force, but he told us that his weapon never came. He had been waiting for that weapon for more than a year. He ordered it through the army and it never came, so he never did that training and he was never a part of the first responders group. That could have been useful to him on October 7th. Let's hear from Shani Medina about his experience raising a family in Tel Aviv and what that transition has been like for him.
There's this song about finding the kibbutz, in translated in Hebrew, it's Talbet v'kibbutz. And it says, why should I fight over parking? And why should I live in a construction site? Yeah. Why should I live in a construction site? So we feel like we're always fighting on parking here and we live in a construction site. The power of the community is one of the things that help us get through the process, to help us to get through the what happened. It's improvement because we can make our own food. We can choose when to go out, when to make our food. We choose when to be in private and when to be more public. It's more like a routine.
After we finished speaking with Mr. Medina, a stunning woman named Reut Karp came walking through the courtyard. If you would say Reut in English, it would be Ruth. Her face was shining and her eyes were so green and piercing and lit up. Who is this woman? She stood up tall. She was very confident. And her confidence and energy completely hid the immense trauma and challenges she's been dealing with since October 7th. Karp is a 42-year-old mother of three. On October 7th, her former husband was shot dead by Hamas terrorists in front of their kids. He had been trying to defend two of their three children who were at home that day. He came after the terrorist with an axe, and he was shot to death after that. Three Hamas fighters entered their house, and he had tried to defend the kids by literally going after them with an axe that he had. Karp had been separated from her husband for 3 months when this tragedy happened. He was with their children in his home. Karp was in a different city that Saturday, despite she too has a home on the kibbutz that she was living in without him after their separation, their short 3 month separation. She found herself coaching and guiding her 10-year-old girl on the phone that terrible morning, October 7th, telling her that the army would arrive soon to rescue her.
When I was talking to Daria, she told me, "Mommy, I must be quiet now. There's somebody in the house. I hear somebody in the house." It was frightening. So now for them, being here in Tel Aviv, it's not like a regular situation. They need to go to school and, you know, their thoughts are not, I mean, they are not fully concentrated. They have this trauma, post-trauma.
While trying to keep her daughter calm, Karp was pumping out messages to anyone she could, trying to bring attention to the terrorist invasion and get some emergency responder to come to her house. The terrorists found Karp's two youngest, who were at home during the murder. Little Daria was hiding under a blanket when a Hamas terrorist found her. He lifted the blanket and put it back down on her. And then after he covered her, he wrote on the walls in Arabic that Hamas doesn't kill babies. That's what they wrote on the wall. And then they left the house and they left the kids. Let's hear from Karp about her response to moving into her new place.
It's a bit difficult, but again, I mean, for me, it's being independent, it's better than, you know, living in a hotel that it's not really a hotel. To have only what you have, I mean, when they got to Eilat with me, they didn't have anything, not even shoes or clothes, nothing. We had to buy everything from the beginning. So it's like a new start, a really new start. So all the people here are trying to make it easier for us. Even they donated a few bicycles for all the kids here so that they can feel like they live in a kibbutz. But there are many rules that they are not aware of. They never had the chance to take a bus and go by a bus by themselves. Even if they want to see, like, you know, grass, they need to go to a park. In the kibbutz, it's not like that. When you step out the door, you are in the park. This is the park.
Have they mentioned it to you?
They didn't mention it to me. I feel it because now they are in the room and they don't go out at all, not even to play with their friends. I think that they are protecting themselves from the world. I mean, I cannot know if it's because of the trauma or because this is what they choose to do. I mean, if the trauma did not happen. And still, when we think about it, it's not realistic. I mean, I still think that, you know, I will wake up one day for a different reality. I want the readers to maybe try to do something to help us to explain the world how terrible it is that we don't really want this war. We never did. I don't have any effects on Bibi Netanyahu. I can't do anything. I just live there. I was born and raised there. I lived there for 42 years. And I cannot change the reality without the help of the people around the world, of the people in Israel. So I believe that it's very, very important for the people to know that I don't feel like I did something wrong. When somebody attacked me in my home and I didn't do anything, it feels terrible that they just open the gate and step into our home and kill us. And it's Israel. We cannot just live with these alerts and raise our children that they know that if they go to the bus and they hear the alert, the sirens, you know, and they need to go to the shelter. It's not like a good way of living. I would not want to raise my children this way. I would love to know that somebody is looking for us, and on that day it was broken because the army did not reach out to my children and to other people that were burned and were screaming for help from the burning safety room. It was like a trap, you know. So I want to live and feel secure. I want to know that the army is there, and if we go back there, nothing will happen to us. For real, not like saying that and doing nothing. But they are there, that we know that nothing will happen to us, even if, again, 3,000 terrorists will come and attack. there is a plan of what to do in such case.
Evacuees who are now living in Tel Aviv are getting assistance from the city and being treated as full residents. They're also getting free veterinary services, reduced rate parking spots along the beachfront, and an opening to join the My Digital application, which offers reduced cost event tickets and programming, especially for Tel Aviv residents. I am signed up for that service. 40 girls and boys from the kibbutz in grades 1 through 8 are set to study at a nearby nature school as well. The Ministry of Education is opening short-term and long-term psychological services and programming for the kibbutz evacuees, as well as tuition-free education for the kids. The Tel Aviv-Yafo municipality has taken in 20,000 evacuees from the south and north, with about 9,300 evacuees in the city from Sderot, Nir Am, Carmia, Ashkelon, the Meta Asher Regional Council, and Kiryat Shmona. They are housed throughout 101 hotels.
It's very, very important to say again that without the nice people, without the good people, people of Israel, they came for us fast. And without any question, they just came and helped us whatever we need. Without that, I don't know where we've been. I don't want to think about that because they helped us with every step we made.
I've found that during this time, it's actually the stories of people who are helping, the stories of people who have been selfless, the stories of people who have done such goodness for one another during times of war. Those are the stories that make me so, so emotional, more than the sad ones. If you have anything that you want to share in response to that story, you can actually write something to us on Spotify, because there's a little poll that comes up when you listen on Spotify and you can respond, or you can send us a message or a comment on any of our materials on Instagram or Facebook. All right. Well, that is it for today's show. Today is Monday, January 22nd, 2023. Tel Aviv has a low of 13 degrees Celsius and a high of 22 degrees. That's 56 degrees Fahrenheit for the low, going up to 72 degrees for the high. Subscribe to the Israel Daily News podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever you're hearing it from. We are everywhere. Don't forget to sign up to our Israel Weekly News Wrap. The Israel Weekly News Wrap is a newsletter with the top 5 stories coming out of Israel from throughout the week. And of course, it has a personal note from me at the top. You can sign up for that at israeldaily.news. A big thank you goes out to our social media director, Michelle Milner. I'm going to send you off now with a song called Don't Lose It All by a cousin duo named Shifra and Dov. They made this song together between London and Israel using Zoom during the COVID-19 pandemic. I like this song. And I think you might too. Enjoy it and have a great and productive day and an excellent week. Shavua Tov, everyone.
Thought you were the king who wore the crown. close it up.